Hello, everybody. Welcome to everyone. Welcome to Breaking the Bias. I'm your host, Diego Barrera. You are listening to this program on WDOT-FM, Port Washington, The Dot. Our PSA for today. What is a good PSA for today? Okay, fine, I'll do this one. Our PSA for today is underage drinking. Underage alcohol use is more likely to kill young people than all other illegal drugs combined. Kids are also beginning to abuse alcohol earlier than you might think. Nearly 20% of 8th graders have reported being drunk, according to a survey conducted by the National Institute on Drug Abuse. These young people are not only putting themselves in danger now, they are also affecting their futures. Research shows that children who first use alcohol before age 15 are 5 times more likely to have alcohol problems than those who start drinking after 21. This has been a public service announcement from the Ad Council. Now, today we have
got a delivery.
Sorry about that. I gave my friend my calculator. He just stopped me by to give it back. But okay, we got all of the housekeeping done. We're going to get into our stories of the day. We're going to try to do this as quickly as we can. We're going to try to have a little bit of discussion and analysis, because I do have a very sad announcement to make at the end of our program, but, you know, that's for the end of our program. Now, let's talk about Chris Cuomo. I know a lot of us, you know, we hear the name of the Cuomo family and we think of Mario Cuomo, the governor of New York during the 80s and the 90s. More recently, Andrew Cuomo, who, of course, had a very terrible fall from grace after he was hailed for his response to the COVID-19 pandemic. Now, Andrew Cuomo, his political downfall led to, of course, a bunch of other downfalls. Among them, Andrew Cuomo's brother, former CNN anchor Chris Cuomo. Of course, the Attorney General's investigation saw that he intended to help Andrew Cuomo, but also that he had his own allegations, which were investigated by CNN. But yesterday, he was back on the air. He was at a new network, News Nation. And we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, what he said and what's, you know, my take on it. He started by saying, he cited William Shakespeare. He said, "The past is prologue." And this was, of course, a quote from The Tempest. Meaning that all that has happened before led to this moment. And so it is with me. Being here with you tonight, and I believe that. And, of course, he had his own project where I feel personally that he kind of changed as a person, as like a journalist, and here's why. As I said before, on my first episode, one person could have a ton of influence over coverage. What people get from a certain news station, if you find that it's biased, it's because management thinks the way that they encourage the anchors, you know, to speak. But Chris Cuomo was the CEO, per se, of his own project. So he got to give his view from his point of life, and that's why I feel people think it sounds different. A lot of people say, "Oh, you shifted to the Republicans," and some say, "This guy's more liberal than he was before." Well, it's because he's neither of those things. He calls himself a free agent, meaning that, you know, he's out to think opinionate for himself. Now, Chris Cuomo carried the mindset, you know, and of course his famous "Let's get after it" motto, you know, in the debut episode. he ended, of course, saying, you know, thank you for being with us. This is the best comeback I could have hoped for. And we are being joined right now by my friend, Dylan Miglio, who, of course, covers these stories, who has his own opinions on Chris Cuomo in general. So we're going to talk a little bit. Thank you, Dylan Miglio, so much for being with us.
Thank you so much, Diego.
So, you and I, we both watched with our own eyes how this whole family went tumbling down.
Yes.
What do you think about Chris Cuomo being back on TV, back, you know, doing his old job, you know, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, it sure is an interesting situation in regard to Chris Cuomo. I mean, my family has some connection to the Cuomo family. I mean, my dad...
Oh, really?
Yeah, my dad has eaten dinner with the Cuomos in the past, and I'm being serious about this, too. So, honestly, I think it's an interesting situation. If a company allows him to go on air, I don't think there's any reason why he shouldn't be allowed to go on air right now. I mean, even if he does a horrendous crime, as long as he's legal and free and allowed to do the action, to say what he's saying legally, I have no problem with it.
A lot of people say that Chris Cuomo and Andrew Cuomo are taking, of course, different approaches. Chris Cuomo, a lot of people are saying that, I made too, that he learned and that he tried again. He started from scrap and, you know, that's what kind of led him to being back on TV. While the other guy didn't really apologize, he just kind of shrugged it off from the very beginning. And now the only thing we hear from Andrew Cuomo is that he simply asks for forgiveness. So, mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on the differences between, do you think that his attitude led him to, returning to do what he loved? Chris?
Yeah, I think Chris Cuomo definitely put himself out there more than Andrew Cuomo did. I mean, he instituted many apologies for something that was arguably much less as bad as what Andrew Cuomo did. And, you know, I mean, we see that Andrew Cuomo isn't on the air right now, and it's because Andrew Cuomo hasn't tried as hard as Chris Cuomo
yeah.
has. And I think Cuomo should be allowed to go on air. I mean, if his ratings are really terrible, that's on him in particular. But, you know, I think he's tried his best as for, instituting his apologies and gaining forgiveness. And I think many people are allowed to forgive him and have forgiven him, and that's why he still has some good ratings right now.
Thank you. And of course, you know, this is all part of News Nation's bigger effort to kind of, you know, grow into another big cable news network similar to what we see with Fox and MSNBC and CNN and other stations out there. So, we'll have to see where this goes. Let's turn to our next story. And it is Ukraine, a flying tornado. Now, Vladimir Zelensky, he signed on to this agreement to allow Ukraine to be part of NATO. And we now know that 9 other nations have, of course, come in support of this decision to include Ukraine into NATO. And now Zelensky said, it was a surprise move, to be honest, because it was really a fast track towards NATO membership, and it needs approval from 30 members, and, with the current situation, not every single country is going to side with Ukraine at this time. There are countries in the UN that are going to side with Russia. For Ukraine to be a part of NATO, you need, the requirements are 30 members, for that stamp of approval. And the 9 NATO countries in Central Europe, they are fearful that Russia could target them next if, you know, this isn't stopped in Ukraine and isn't really if this really keeps going on. Now, here's another thing. War in general, of course, causes a lot of conflict. A lot of people tend to really, get involved and have their own say, and you have all these other countries taking sides and really kind of really disgusting means, and I feel that's what prolongs this conflict. Because there can really be, like, no, there will never be a permanent agreement, is what I'm trying to say here. But, well, we're talking about war. Now, in the post-World War II era, we're looking at a situation where if Ukraine joins NATO, and Russia still continues with their war crimes and continues to annex NATO territory, then the U.S. is going to get involved. Because, as NATO policy dictates, should a NATO country get invaded, then all other countries in some form must, you know, must get involved. The United States is helping Ukraine by sending billions of dollars, you know, voluntarily. That's what President Biden is doing. But now, if Ukraine is in NATO, and Putin still continues his war, well then, things are gonna change. We're going to turn to another story right now. And Dylan Miglio, of course, will be back for this one. We're going to talk about what we saw with North Korea. Now, North Korea, for those of you who don't know what happened, North Korea on Tuesday conducted a weapons test. A nuclear cable ballistic missile flew over Japan, and people warned that it could reach U.S. Pacific territory and Guam, and of course, going beyond, really. And the South Korean and U.S. militaries, they responded by launching fighter jets, which fired weapons at a target off South Korea's west coast. And this is, of course, in an effort, you know, to show strength against North Korea. Now, the missile launched, it was described as a really provocative or problematic weapon so far this year. And, it, you know, it pushes to develop a fully-fledged nuclear arsenal capable of threatening the U.S., our mainland, and allies with the goal of wrestling concessions from these countries. That is what some experts are saying, and I'm quoting out of course, the Associated Press here. Now, Adrienne Watson, who is the National Security a spokesperson, said that the U.S. is going to continue their efforts to limit North Korea's ability to, quote, advance its prohibited ballistic missile and weapons of mass destruction programs, including with allies and U.N. partners. And, Japanese authorities have alerted residents, you know, of potential, you know, evacuations because of this, in the first, you know, what we call J Alert. It's been around since 2017. And, you know, it came about because North Korea fired an intermediate-range Hwasong-12 missile twice over Japan in the span of a few weeks. Now, we're going to talk once again with Dylan Miglio right now. I know that he has been, he's told me that he's been watching this development with regards to the North Korea issue. So, what do you have to say? What do you think about what we saw, that scare, that jump scare, really, over North Korea and over Japan?
Yeah, so I've personally done a lot of research on the North Korean and Japanese situation as for their military goes and for a missile test. I had to do it because of debate.
But yeah, but also, tell us about it.
But also for personal research, I just wanted to get that over with. But the situation really is North Korea has been doing this for a while. The fact is that they haven't really sent a missile over Japanese territory, Japanese territory.
Yeah, not the territory, but around.
Oh, yeah, around. Yeah. They have done it around the EEZ, or Economic Exclusive Zone, in Japan, but they haven't really gone over the territory, and this is a huge, it's like an acceleration of the power, or the threat that North Korea has, because they are taking even more risks. But the fact of the matter is that they're not hesitant to take these risks, and that's because they know for a fact that Japan isn't going to be striking back. Japan or the United States aren't going to be hitting these missiles into the water or imposing more sanctions. I mean, I guess they can, but they don't rely on the West anymore. They don't rely on the international economy. So really, they have nothing that is preventing them from doing outrageous things like they are right now.
Let's talk a little bit, you and I, on like these measurements. Now, this is of course coming from an outside source saying that according to South Korean and Japanese estimates, the North Koreans fired from, you know, from its northern province bordering China, and it traveled between 4,500 to 4,600 kilometers, which is about 3,000 miles, at a maximum altitude of 970 to about 1,000 kilometers. Mm-hmm. And the Japanese Defense Minister, Yasuko Tsuhamada, said it landed in the Pacific at about 3,200 kilometers, which is about 1,990 miles off of the northern Japanese coast. Fortunately, of course, you know, there were no reports on, mm-hmm. you know, to any damages, such as, you know, aircrafts or ships. And the South Korea's defense ministry said the missile flew farther than any other weapon fired by North Korea. And before Tuesday's launch, what we know of was that the longest, which was in 2017, was 3,700 kilometers or 2,300 miles. It was a long flight from Hwasong. And, but those are the statistics that we have. So you see, North Korea will not stop. And by the way, we throw a missile at them, we're done. Like, we are done. Mm-hmm. So, if North Korea knows the fate or the trouble that they're putting themselves into, why do they keep going? What's this whole idea of domination about if it's gonna, you know, it's gonna go against them?
Yeah, so they want to unite the Korean Peninsula.
Yeah.
They want to end the West. That's their end goal here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so does China, so does Russia. They don't want the West to have any dominance whatsoever in the world. They want to be the world powerhouses. And in doing all these things, North Korea has no friends at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, they have China, but what is China to them? China views them as worthless. China doesn't care about them.
Mm-hmm.
They'll appease them because it's another power in
yeah.
the region that supports them. It's not a Western ally. But the reality is that North Korea has nothing to lose here, and to have nothing to lose is
yeah.
a really bad thing. They have no reliance on the international economy, no reliance on, basically barely any reliance on China, barely any reliance on the West. So no matter the sanction, no matter the threats that the West pulls, it won't really affect North Korea. So North Korea has the right away to continue doing these things. And I guess the purpose of it is to display their dominance, to say that we are powerful, that we should have an outlet. Or it's just the dictator, Kim Jong-un, wanting attention because he hasn't been that popular in a while. Who knows what it really is? Maybe it's them testing their nuclear system. I mean, they tested one earlier this year. It fell, I mean, it couldn't even exit the country. Fell right into the sky. Estimated deaths were like 400 people because of the failed missile test.
Yeah.
Really, it could either be just testing for the future. It could be Kim Jong-un wanting more attention. It could be a mixture of those, or it could be a completely another factor that we don't know anything about.
In 2006,
mm-hmm.
Kim Jong-il was, from the last time that I heard this story, he was successful in trying to develop some sort of nuclear weapon, nuclear weapons test. And in the 1990s, in North Korea, a lot of people died, of course, of starvation because of how much money the government put in, really, to make these nuclear weapons. And then again, you know, this is kind of right after the fall of the Soviet Union. Now, some experts are saying that North Korea needs to try out a few other technologies to acquire, you know, nuclear-armed missiles. And with each new test, you know, it's pushing them closer to be able to reach the U.S. mainland. And that, of course, you know, you got missiles that are striking at various different angles, you know, going at various
mm-hmm.
different ranges. It's not really going to, it's not really going to stop anytime soon. They're going
yeah.
to keep advancing. And also some experts say that North Korean leader Kim Jong-un is eventually going to return to some form of diplomatic talks, but it's not really happening, right?
Yeah, I don't expect for that to happen. I mean, we had, I think, 2 years of
yeah.
no missiles whatsoever,
mm-hmm.
or maybe just a year, under
yeah.
Trump's administration and his diplomacy. I mean, he was the first president to go to North Korea
yeah, he was,
in decades.
Yeah,
right?
It was like an attempt
right.
to kind of like build relationships.
Exactly,
yeah.
And I mean, I think it's helped the situation a bit, but in the end, I mean, we see where we are right now. Maybe it is a leadership issue with Joe Biden. Maybe it's our diplomatic issue. Maybe it's just the recession in Russia right now and the Ukrainian war. It could be a whole bunch of things. But really, We shouldn't be appeasing North Korea. I mean, it's a dictatorship. We shouldn't be giving them materials in exchange for anything. I really don't know the best solution for solving this whole situation.
There really is none.
Yeah, I don't think there is one. I mean,
not even diplomacy. Not even diplomacy is going to do a lot.
Yeah.
Keep going.
I think the best thing we could do right now is hope. Hope that North Korea doesn't do these things. And if anything, try to build up defense systems that can take down a missile when it's over Japanese airspace, when it's in our EEZ, when it's near us. And, you know, I think that's the best we could do right now, because doing anything that'll attack North Korea directly, I don't think that's going to end well whatsoever.
Yeah. We have an expression. You guys don't know the expression. If you can't beat them, join them. No one is going to join North Korea except for, you know, China and Russia, obviously. So, you know, my personal take is that really, like, diplomacy, this whole talk of peace and security, it's not really going to go anywhere. It's not really going to stop North Korea. Dylan Miglio, thank you so much again for joining us on the show. We're proud, you know, that you could, you know, be with us, that you could join us.
Yeah, thank you so much, Diego, for having me. I really enjoyed being on the show. No matter where it ends, no matter where you go, I really appreciate it. Even if it doesn't end, who knows? But thank you so much.
All right. Before we go today, I have a bit of a sad announcement to make. Now, I've been doing this show. I've had a lot of inspiration. My goal, as I said, was to come here and bring you the news. But not just bring it to you, but tell you why it matters. Like, not be biased, not be one-sided, just anything that really people could, that really anyone could relate to, that anyone, like, could kind of, I guess, opinionate about in some form. Or if you don't want to opinionate, you know, you don't have to opinionate. There are stories that are going on that I choose not to cover because, you know, there may be, like, a lot of battleground and a lot of controversy. But, this is gonna be my last episode. My time is up here at, Breaking the Bias. I'm not sure who's gonna take over the time slot, but whoever it is, I wish them all the best. As far as the show, maybe there will be some way to keep it going, because here's the reality. Human beings disagree all the time, and mankind has always had disagreements. No human or no person or no idea or is perfect. But I think what's more important is the way we choose to kind of argue, the way we choose to debate. Are we debating healthy or are we just name-calling? That's what I said in that first episode. And words matter, but we need to address them in a way that doesn't hurt anybody, and, you know, that's, you know, respectful, that's courteous. I personally, and this is, like, going, you know, beyond the whole era of news and media, because, in my personal life, I've had experiences with people. I've had, you know, different, relations, different, like, you know, friendships and interactions with people that I've met, and, some of them have gone well, some of them not so well, but I think the important thing that I'm trying to focus on is trying to see how I can make things better for me and for the other person. I feel I came on this podcast because it helped me prepare, it helped me to learn to become a better, person, I guess, to argue with, you know, to be, you know, unbiased, to be kind of, you know, transparent, to just explain the facts and accept reality. And that's what my goal is. We have a lot of great journalists out there who do a lot of good, who are unbiased to report the facts, but that doesn't mean that our work is over. So, I want to thank all of you very much for allowing me to be part of this show. It really, really means a lot to me that I got to sit here, we got to talk about stories. But before we go, a quick promo. Our freshman, the family night, as I said, on our last edition, it's October 11th, which is, a week from today. Today is, of course, Tuesday, October 4th, so a week from today. So, as I said before, whoever takes over this time slot, good luck.